think you're going to like what I've come up with in regards to the affidavit of beneficiary.
Oh, you got a new one?
Well, no, it's not really new. It's just how it's going to be, how it's to be used.
Oh, okay. Well, that was the next thing I was thinking of, is how to reopen the case.
So, here's what I've come up with. We create these, we create three affidavit of beneficiary. The first one is basically naming everybody that is connected to the birth certificate estate trust. The second one is naming everybody that's connected to the Social Security Number Trust. Yeah. And the third one is a generic one that's basically just listing trustees 1 through 999, which can be applied to any of the active trusts that we have title documented. Now, that gets put into the new trust packet that's filed into the public record. So now when you get that back, you already have a publicly filed affidavit of the beneficiary. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Now we slap a writ of mandamus, just like the Federal Reserve Bank does to all of its entities and banks and everything underneath it. Because what we're doing is we're saying, hey, we're the beneficiary. Yo, trustee, here's what you need to do. Or here's what you're assuming, correct this. Here's what you've done, correct this, et cetera, et cetera. And we slap the affidavit of beneficiary on as an attachment, and we send that to the parties that are related to the birth certificate estate trust, the SSN trust, and we don't worry about the active trust yet. Now, after we send that out, we then do our UCC-1 because, hey, we're now going forward, are we not?
Yeah.
We've told the trustees, you need to remedy this. We're going to go ahead. Now, Barbara, what she did was that she did her filing according to what these people did against the Church of Scientology. They accessed the 1849 California court system. Because they show that the 1879 Constitution has been entirely wiped out.
Wow.
So they accessed the California system. Church of Scientology could not answer, so the people ended up with the default judgment, just like what Barbara did. Well, now you have your default judgment that's backed by the writ of mandamus, that's backed by the affidavit of beneficiary. She then packaged that up, and that's what she gave to the bank to go ahead and process.
Wow.
Why can't we do that with all of it?
Sure, why not? That's great.
The what?
That's great. So you're putting this together from different people that are getting results.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So I'm trying to figure out what needs to go in what step in order to complete it. And the writ of mandamus, this is key because I've already gone through the doctrines of res judicata, collateral estoppel or estoppel in record, decisis, all of these other things and how they relate. One is basically in relationship to law, one's in relationship to the parties, and one's in relationship to the actual fact or the condition. And set this up so that, in essence, what a writ of mandamus is, you holding your own court.
Wow.
That's what it is. You're holding your own court, and you're backing it up with this publicly filed record, the affidavit of beneficiary.
Good thinking.
Well, the only thing that matters that we're talking about here is, one, who's the beneficiary, the special deposit nature of the res, and the trustee has been self-dealing.
That's right. Yeah. I've heard those terms. I've heard that before. I've heard that before in some cases. Self-dealing is illegal.
Exactly. And so now, trustee, fix this. So the UCC 1 and 3 is dealing with future distributions because you're not actually grabbing the security. You're just moving where the security is paid out. But the the judgment that you get actually creates another bond that you can then file with the security intermediator to liquidate.
Wow.
So maybe we can't get cash out of whoever it is we're going after, but we're sure as heck going to get cash out of the bond that we get as a judgment against them.
I see.
That's what Barbara did with her case. I mean, in essence, she was able to jump past all these steps that I'm proposing because she got the judgment.
Yeah, with the mandamus.
So she didn't even use a mandamus. She just went in for default judgment using the 1849 court system.
Oh, wow.
The default judgment was more than enough for her to go to the bank.
Oh.
I'm saying these other things are nothing more than reinforcements causing only one direction to go forward with.
I see.
So in essence, what she did is she built a wall with no footing underneath it. And the bank is buying it.
Wow.
All right, fine. Once the bank buys it and it gets taken care of, what do you care about the wall?
Right. Well,
what I'm doing is I'm showing, hey, let's build this foundation, build the wall on it, and now if anybody comes a knocking, that wolf ain't getting in.
Yeah, it's a protection. Mm-hmm. Showing that we got the power. We're the beneficiary, basically. That's the
right.
Bottom line. We're the beneficiary, and you're stealing all of our documents and doing all this illegal stuff with the security, and profiting from the security that's ours, mine. And now, so do we need to do the threat letter? Is that like in the beneficiary affidavit saying we're going to do a 1099A, corrected 1099A, if you don't give us a remedy?
This will be all in the writ of mandamus.
Oh, I see.
See, that's what a mandamus is instructions to do something.
I see.
Whereas a writ of prohibition is stop doing something.
Oh.
Well, we don't want them to stop necessarily. We want them to correct. And here's the reasons why you're correcting. Number one, correct your record. Why? I'm the beneficiary. You somehow have forgotten that.
presumed we abandoned the securities.
Right. The res is special, not general. Correct that.
Yeah.
You've been dipping into these funds as if they were your own.
Yeah.
Self-dealing.
Yeah. Cool.
So I think we, in essence, what we're doing is we're going back to the source of the man. And like I talked with Barbara, and she sent me, some of these things, affidavit of life and all this other stuff. And I'm going, Barbara, when you read through these affidavit of life, you'll see that what these guys are doing is that they're operating on level one and level three. They're talking about the real man, but then they're talking about commercial code. They're talking about all these procedures, but they're never touching level two beneficiary.
Wow.
That in essence, what happens is that our entire court system is predicated upon bankruptcy. Bankruptcy can only see fictions.
Right.
So when you're going into court, you're basically at that moment, you're standing between level two trust law and level three commercial law.
Mm-hmm.
When you tell the judge you're the beneficiary, you have just put in the key to open the door to go to level two in chambers for equity.
Mm.
When you don't do that, the judge then proceeds in the courtroom in commercial law as if you're the trustee.
Yeah.
There's your hinge point.
Big difference, yeah.
Now, the judge will never see level one, and that is when the real man says, I'm the real flesh and blood man. The real man has to wrap himself with a fictional title, in this case, beneficiary, and now the judge sees him.
Even in chambers?
Well, yes, because that's where equity is.
Yeah.
Because the judge never gets into level one, the real man, because that's common law. And what did they say in 1938 in the Erie Railroad case? There is no federal common law.
That was it. Yeah, that was a big one.
That means the federal courts cannot see the real man.
Yeah.
They can only see fiction.
Wow.
See, I asked this question. Which came first, fictions or equity?
Equity.
No, fictions.
Really?
Common law is what the real man does, and common law does not contemplate fictions. But what happened was the aristocracy wrapped themselves with fictions in order to try to give themselves protection. And they were screwing the little guy in the process. So equity came to life as kind of a way to help the little guy not get the uneven weights, uneven weights and measures. That's what fiction does. It creates uneven weights and measures. And so you'll have guys that'll say, oh, but equity softens the common law. No, it doesn't. Lewin is very clear. Equity eats out the heart of common law. People, the aristocracy, hide themselves behind fictions and screw the masses, and equity helps them do it in many cases.
Wow.
It softens the blow to the aristocracy. Just like when Nancy Pelosi said, Trump is destroying our way of life. She wasn't talking about my way, your way. She was talking about her way of life. It's all in the wording.
Yeah, being a deep state.
Right.
That,
so
yeah.
The equity came after fictions. God's law does not contemplate fictions.
Right.
Because they're not real.
Right.
So, so in essence, equity basically is sitting there, and today it's been, remember, they combined law and equity. In essence, what they did is they said, we got rid of law, there's only equity left, and equity only has a few points. One, who's the beneficiary? Two, beneficiary, can you prove trust? Three, trustee, how are you going to fix this? Clerk, close the door on all this.
Wow.
There's nothing left in equity.
Hmm.
That's all in chambers, and that's as simple as it gets.
Wow.
I mean, I hope this is ringing true with
well,
you.
It is to me, yeah.
Okay, good. Because I'm gonna continue to make these templates and, you know, do what I can. I'm gonna send stuff over to you. I really think that this can all be done administratively.
Well, yeah, that's what I hope. We don't want to go into the court. We want to do it all by papers.
Mm-hmm. Now, I did run across a paperwork of, I need to see if, I ran across a filing in which it presented to the clerk to put the documents in sealed. And I need to massage that into this, because if we do have to go into a court, I would like to keep this in a sealed nature if possible. In essence, to have a private hearing rather than a public hearing, if we have to get to that point.
Yeah, well, that's what I was asking for, the protective order. Because it's state secret information that we have that the courts do not want the public to know what we're doing to get our title back with our trust that we're set up. So
right.
I was asking for a protective order so we could go in the judge's chambers and discuss this rather than embarrass the court in public, in the open court in the public, where they usually, if somebody goes in there and says, I'm a real man, then they send them away to mental evaluation.
No way.
You know,
I only spent 6 months like that.
How they do all that. That's the shit that goes on.
That's right.
So we want to make sure we're not in that place when we go in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be like the sealed documents would be perfect.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I'm going to keep that in mind as I try to massage this in. The other thing is, why do we authenticate these signatures? Is this a level 2 argument or a level 3 position? I mean, what is the reasoning for authenticating signatures?
Because the signature has value.
No. Moms or the informant's autograph on the certificate of life has value, but the countersignature by the registrar, why are we authenticating theirs and then authenticating the state secretary of state's signature? I don't think. Well, and I know people will say, well, this is to move us outside the United Nations. Well, the United Nations is a level 3 issue. The trust is a level 2, which supersedes level 3.
Well, forgive me. I'm not up to speed on the levels that you showed me the other day. I haven't processed that. So you need to, as you go through that, you need to explain which level is which.
All right. So everything, as soon as you say you're the beneficiary, you're back. You're at level 2, trust law. Level 1 meaning the contract you make with yourself. Like when the creator said, let there be light, and there was light.
Yeah.
Okay. Level 2 is when you take what you created and you put it in the hands of management, in this case, a trust, with a trustee. Okay, so that's level 2. And we know as beneficiary, that is where we're at. That's what we're shooting for. Level 3 today, or level 3 used to be the Constitution, but over time, that was bumped up a level, and statutes and regulations were inserted in between. And then over time, the United Nations came to be, and commercial law was inserted. So in essence, level 3 today is commercial law, or admiralty on the sea. Level 4 is statutes, regulations, policies, legislative items. And level 5 is constitutions and bills of rights. So when we get a signature authenticated, I say that is a level 3 procedure and really has no value in regards to what we're doing as beneficiary at level 2.
Well, where are we authenticating his signature? We're not. We're just sending him a letter that now we know what's going on, and we want our title back.
Yes, but I... the birth certificate, I went through the instructions, and so what I had done is I had initiated sending the birth certificate up to the Secretary of State of California to authenticate the registrar's signature on the birth certificate. And when I got that back, I sent that over to the Secretary of State, United States, to authenticate the state Secretary of State's signature.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And I'm thinking, why are we going through this process?
Yeah, I see.
And I know the idea was, oh, we're trying to make that birth certificate come off outside the jurisdiction of the United States and put it into the United States of America.
Oh, I see.
What do we care?
Yeah, you're right. Come to think of it, there's no reason to get them authenticated.
No.
We formed a trust, and that trumps everything else.
Exactly. All the birth certificate is being used, just like when I FOIA the SS-5 application, it's being used as evidence that a trustee is holding res.
Wow.
That's all it's there for.
Yeah. Wow. Pretty clever.
I'm just trying to, I'm going back because, I mean, it's taken me 6 months to get to this point, but now I think I'm to a point where I can begin to challenge the presentations that Christian Walters, you know, because a lot of this originated with him, and people have just continued on, not really challenging what he presented. And I'm not faulting him. What he knew and what he did, I think, was excellent. But... All right, so when you get that UCC-3 form, go ahead and send it over to me. I don't have that.
I sent it. I want you to open it up.
Okay, let me see if with
your way of thinking, it may not even be necessary, whereas the Form 56 would replace that and put him in the position that we want as trustee to do our work.
Well, that's why I'm saying that after the affidavit of ownership, has been sent out in regards to the SSN Trust. One of those is actually going to the Secretary of Treasury, which I've already sent for me. As soon as he has delivery of that, I think the Form 56 should go immediately thereafter.
Oh.
Because now we've already laid the groundwork with the affidavit of ownership. Now we get him to sign off. We now have that. What the Form 56 is that when we go to any bank to process our final documents, you know, for work, it's a power of attorney or a directive to that bank, do it.
Yeah, I see the way you changed the wording on that was, it was all the same thing, but a little different to clarify the words, yeah.
Because what we're doing is we're looking at all these banks as the secretary's bitches.
Yeah.
So let's treat them as such. I did not get anything from you in my inbox, other than from earlier this morning. Okay, so party information change, add a name. Okay, John Henry Doe Family Trust. I see you've added the term family trust to this, whereas I've been just doing lowercase John hyphen Henry colon Doe and then right straight into the registered mail number as the organizational name.
Yeah, I had all of my people put it in. They made the trust the John Henry Doe Family Trust and then the registered mail number.
Okay, so do you want me to because I think my affidavit of ownerships that have already gone out do not have family trust in them, nor do they have the capital letters like you display. I just called it, like I said, lowercase John hyphen Henry colon Doe, and then right straight into the registered mail number.
Yeah, I think we should change it because then that's...
Okay.
That's a clarification of a trust to me.
Okay. All right, mailing address. Okay, so now we're adding Munchen.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Washington, D.C. Okay. All security certificates, accounts, trust, deposits backed by, found it on, represented, original registration certificate. Collaterals held in a trust. Okay. Secured party and provide name of authorizing debtor. Same thing. Okay. Filing number, which is the, I guess that's the public filing of the new trust. Number 10.
Yeah, it's the one that's already done.
Gotcha.
Which you haven't, you know, you're not there yet we got to do all the other documents to put underneath it. We got to record those in the county registry and get a certified copy and then put all those underneath the UCC-1.
Correct.
And the 1AD and then do the 3. But I thought this would be a way to add him into our trust with this UCC-3 because we're adding party information. Add name. Up in box five, four.
So now we can, is there any way, on this particular form, is there a place to put an attachment? And if so, I would think the signed form 56 would be an excellent attachment.
We can put that instead of what we have in box 10, we can put attachment A or whatever it is. C attach form 56.
Okay. Now is this 3, this UCC 3, it's, 1A is the initial financial statement file number. So there's already UCC 1 being filed.
Right.
This is a 3 that's being there and, because number 10 here, if the original packet is already tied to UCC-1, then this number 10 can be used as an exhibit to Form 56.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I was saying. We could just take this out because it's already identified.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what the date is, as long as it's got a number.
Right.
And it's gotcha. already done. So then we can just do C attached uh-huh. Form 56.
Keep this on the back of my head as I'm...
This is completing what I've been trying to do for
mm-hmm.
quite a while, although we do have some default judgments ready.
Right.
In several cases, and I didn't know how to handle those until you told me how Barbara did it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do the same thing.
So I think, yeah, so I mean, I think we're going good. All I'm doing is building a hell of a foundation in order to make it so going forward. They're just, in essence, if you get that snowball rolling down the mountain,
yeah,
if it's big enough, by the time it gets to the bottom, nobody's stopping it.
Well, the question is then, your case and my case, the tax cases, how do you reopen those cases?
By filing, to me... Okay, so if we notify all the parties with a writ of mandamus to correct and attached as the affidavit of beneficiary, and attached, I guess, would be the, or we put reference that, hey, we can bring all the trust documents for you to look at.
Yeah.
That goes, and we put a cover sheet of, to make this private, I think that would go back into the court. It gives them option. If they don't respond, then we actually file a counter complaint. It's a cross complaint
mm-hmm.
with counter claims.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That's so that would be what it would be, because the writ of mandamus is not that. What it is simply our own, it is a judgment of our own internal court.
Yeah.
Okay. The next step then would be to do a cross complaint with counterclaims yeah. listed. And what Barbara is proposing is that what we actually do is do that in the state court, like here in California, under the 1849 Constitution Court. In essence, bring all those federal parties into your state court, and you're accessing a law or a system they can't do anything with. Even where you're at, Rhode Island has an original constitution, I'm sure, from somewhere in the late 1700s, early 1800s, that they tried to supersede with a later one in the 1800s. So you access the prior one. If you read it real closely, you'll see that the second one, only citizens of the United States were allowed to ratify it.
The 14th Amendment.
Yes, whereas the first one, it was ratified by the people of Rhode Island.
Yeah, before emancipation, okay. I'll look it up. I'm sure there is one.
Right, and so I'm speaking a little out of turn because I obviously don't know that particular process. I'm only getting it, you know, from Barbara, and a lot of times I have to filter what she's saying because one, she's a 70-year-old woman, and that's two things going against her, and so she can get a little off track.
I see.
At times, and it's okay. I have to pull it back. Yeah. I got to find those connective tissues.
Yeah.
Once again, back to the bone.
All right. So my thought is that number one, going back to the beneficiary affidavit, the threat is in there that you're going to tell on them. You're going to rat on them by doing a corrective 1099A. And they should react to that.
Well, sure, especially under a mandamus. And the mandamus is their instructions. Do this. The affidavit of beneficiary builds upon the affidavit of ownership. it sets in stone the simple fact that all of this is already in play. They have no wiggle room. Remember, we're putting the affidavit of ownerships and the affidavit of beneficiary into the public record as attachments to the new trust.
Right.
Those are then being attached to the mandamus.
I see.
How do they go? There's no hearsay there. It's all fact.
I see. Because it's in the record.
Exactly.
Can't be disputed.
So the mandamus is going to them. It's referencing those two records that are already been put into the public.
Yeah.
And they're given their instructions to do this. More than likely, they'll comply. If not, then we take the next step to do a counter complaint.
Well, that's where I was at, was that I would think they would be anxious to comply because they don't want to get busted for their illegal processing of those securities.
So where would I send the one from, like, my criminal case, the mandamus, with its attachments? I believe that it should go straight to the judge in chambers.
Yeah, a registered mail letter in a flat envelope right to the judge's chambers, exactly. And he's got to sign for it.
Now, with that being the way it is, if he doesn't do something, that's, hey, you had your opportunity to keep this private. Now, we're going to try to keep it private by doing a cross-complaint into the same exact court case and try to say we'd like to keep this sealed, but Judge, we're bringing this now into this case directly.
Well, why not just cut to the chase and do the default and take that to the bank?
Well, okay, now that would be in your... Now, we also have the option, instead of going back into the same exact case, to go into the state and initiate a cross-complaint to get the default.
We've got three different routes to go.
Exactly.
One, just do the default right there. Or did Barbara do a mandamus to get the default? Or did didn't show up?
No, the only thing she did was an affidavit of ownership, because that was something that was on your website, and so she just followed the template, because your template on the website is very much the same thing.
Cool.
and she filed it. She did a counter complaint into the existing court case based upon the 1849 California Constitution. In essence, she said, court, I am not accessing you as an 1879 court, but as an 1849 court. Exactly as what the people did against Scientology.
Okay, so where I would differ is that the fact that we sent a registered mail letter to the judge telling him that we're not the infant and we're seeking a special hearing that's going to be under an order of protection because this is state secret information. And then none of them have ever responded. So when you told me the other day, you reminded me that when the mail gets dropped into the box, it's already received by the party that you're sending it to.
That's so we could registered mail. So once you've handed it to the Postmaster General, correct? So Postmaster, yes.
So now, if he doesn't respond in 21 days, then he's in default.
Correct.
Okay, so. Can't you take the default right to the bank and get paid?
That's what I'm thinking, yes. Barbara has an example here in front of me, and I have gone over it. And at this particular point, it's kind of like, not necessarily over my head, but I don't have it absorbed well enough to be able to pick out the points that actually accomplished the task.
I see, okay.
She's one of those that there may be 90% superfluous stuff, and I'm only looking for the 10% that were the grounded points that allow what she did to do.
Yeah, I see.
So it's taking me time to absorb all of this.
It does take time.
You know, laws. I don't, even right now, our discussion here, this is a work in progress.
Yeah.
But I think that we're making progress. That's the best part of it.
Absolutely. I agree.
Okay, so I'm going to keep working on what I'm working on, and I will keep reviewing.
it just seems like that Barbara put a spark in your process, and then our conversation made it even pointing in the right direction with more force, and now between us, we're getting it completed.
Right, and so now Barbara has everything done. Everything's back to the bank. If that account that she has set up is, if there's a deposit of $1.5 million and $250,000, we will know this worked.
Wow. Well, that's where I was trying to figure out how to get my case reopened, and I guess we're almost there.
Yes.
Okay.
It takes time. I've met too many people now in the Christian Walters community who they seem to study, and never pull the trigger. And it's like, well, what's the point? If you're never going to pull the trigger and you're just going to be a good little citizen anyway, why do any of it?
Well, I know, in my case, I know part of it is the fact that I don't want to go back to jail, just like you.
So.
If there's, and then when I go into the clerk to drop this in their face and say, I want to reopen this case and this is why, then I want to make sure I have my feet on the ground and I know what I'm doing so that I can complete it.
Okay, what I'm under the impression of is that you're not reopening the case. You don't say that.
Right.
When you simply file with that case number, it's reactivated automatically.
Okay.
That's what I'm under the impression of from what I have heard through the pipelines from others who have done something similar.
So you're talking about the mandamus or the default, which...
Well, the mandamus... Well, yeah, I guess basically you'd be right. If the mandamus is going to end chambers and they do nothing... then the next thing would be the default, and that would be filed directly into the case, which actually would be very similar to what Mark Bryan did in his tax case in 2018. He put a default judgment. What he had done is he had sent questionnaires to the prosecutor and the clerk of the court and said, if I don't hear from you within X number of days, then your answer is yes, or your answer is no in regards to this question.
Wow.
Then, when that time period came, he then put in affidavits, basically on their behalf, with the questions answered.
Wow.
Then he put in a default judgment. Well, the clerk responded with their own default judgment, and then he put in and said, we can't have two judgments in a case. By the way, yours is still missing jurisdiction. Mine's completely satisfied.
Pretty clever.
And then a day later, he put in his CUSIP information, and everything went dead. So from start to that particular point was 30 days for him. Everything went dead for 60 days. And then Richard Zuckerman, or whatever his name is, who's still there on behalf of the IRS, or the Treasury Department, IRS, whatever, he put in that the entire case had been paid, taken care of, settled, satisfied, whatever, and that the case was dismissed.
Wow.
Then, the very next day, the judge actually entered into the fray for the very first time, supporting the dismissal and closing the case officially.
Wow. Well, why do you think that was? I mean, because he did the affidavit and he answered all the questions for him?
What he did, and the way that I can surmise this, is that Mark Bryan used the UCC judo against the prosecutor and the clerk of the court, and he ended up punching a hole through the UCC into the common law. Because the UCC is very clear that when there's a, when it doesn't address an issue of common law, the common law will be, you know, used.
Yeah.
And that's what he did by basically the affidavits and having the questions and then put in the judgment.
Wow.
And that's, now, the drawback to what he did was the fact that all he did was push them out of the private sector back into the public sector. It doesn't stop them from coming back in the future.
I see.
Now, they may not want to because he's not very tasty, but it doesn't stop them.
Yeah.
What we're doing here, it by far stops them because they have to get around the beneficiary position.
Right.
Which they'll never do.
They can't. That's right.
So we're putting a, what we're doing is that we're putting them back where they belong, and that is inside the building that's government operations. Period.
Yeah.
They're not, we're not allowing them to come out here into the private sector and think that we're all trustees bound to the public sector.
That's right.
We're beneficiaries operating or surviving, enjoying the private sector.
That's a remedy we've been looking for a long time.
Yes. And there it is.
Yeah.
In essence, when we are considered trustee, or yeah, the trustee position in the public sector, we are actually sitting at the lowest rung on the ladder of authority.
That's right.
That's why we get screwed.
We're just cattle. Chattel.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I, very that was good. One of the things that put into my filings, that this is nothing but cattle processing.
That's all it is.
And the judge, oh my God, he was so pissed off at me for saying things like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's why I was trying to get a protective order, because I wanted to get into private chambers to do this, because they don't like it in the public.
Okay, well, okay, let me tell you something more about the writ of mandamus. Okay, so the examples that I have is what the Federal Reserve Bank does to those under its umbrella or under its authority. Are not trustees under the authority of the beneficiary in regards to
yes.
benefits?
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
That's where your authority comes from, to issue a writ of mandamus to the trustee.
Oh, I see.
Why would I go to another trustee, i.e. a judge?
Exactly.
To get another trustee to do his job when they're both in cahoots with each other.
Well, that's what I thought when you first mentioned Barbara did her own court. I said, "Well, how did that? How does that work?" And now you're talking about the mandamus.
Now, the other thing is that where I came from originally back in my early 20s was how corporations operate. Because I was running a big construction company, development company, and corporations. People always think that the president of the corporation is the top dog. He is not.
Yeah.
He may be the top officer, but he must have the secretary's countersignature to do anything.
Yeah.
Now, in level of authority, the board of directors is higher than the officers.
Correct.
Now, above the board of directors are the shareholders. So the shareholders hold a meeting of their own accord, and they can hire and fire directors as they wish. Directors hold their own meeting. They hire and fire officers as they wish. Officers then run the day-to-day chores.
Mm-hmm.
If the beneficiary can hold their own beneficiary meeting in the sense of putting out a writ of mandamus, what's the difference?
Yeah. There isn't any. That's a good,
exact.
It's a good analogy.
That's right. So this is, I've always been operating trust from the perspective of knowing how corporations operated for 30 years, over 30 years now. That has been my success, or because of that knowledge, understanding who's in what chain of authority.
Yeah.
As we get through this, it's like there is nothing higher than beneficiary. Well, you know, other than our creator, but... In the world of fictions, beneficiary is the highest position.